Hear the Homelessness Marathon live beginning at 5 p.m. Wednesday, February 17th, and continuing until 6 a.m. Thursday morning.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Oregon Student Nurses Association Convention 2016, Empowered for Excellence. That's taking place February 20th from 8 to 4:30 at the PCC Sylvania campus in Portland. This year's keynote speaker will be Dana Bjarnason, the Chief Nursing Officer and Vice President of OHSU. Topics covered by the conference include flight nursing, forensic nursing, veteran care, public health nursing, and more. Again, that's the Oregon Student Nurses Association Convention 2016, Empowered for Excellence, taking place Saturday, February 20th from 8 to 4:30 at the PCC Sylvania campus, 12000 Southwest 49th Avenue in Portland. The Oregon Student Nurses Association, working to lead the future of nursing. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama.
Greetings, everyone. To Cutie Pop Talk, where we invite
you to sit down and listen to what's happening in Portland's queer and trans community of color out here and beyond. You know, I know it's been a while since we've actually had a live show, so I want to thank everyone that's tuning into the show. It's been a big transition that we're going through, and I've got some updates for you. But also, if you're a new listener, I do want to welcome you to the show and kind of explain what we do here. So Cutie Pop Talk is created to increase the awareness of the queer and trans community out here in Portland and the intersectionality of our identities, and also be a bridging resource to community members so that people can actually find themselves in the community out here, because we are so easily marginalized in Portland. And so we're essentially a really big resource to the community out here. In the past, we did have myself and another co-host, but we went through some changes about 3 months ago, and we've kind of moved away from that framework where there's a two kind of person show to be more reflective of the goals of the show, which is to uplift the entire community and reflect that. So we've moved towards a collective right now, and I want to introduce a few of our new community members to you all tonight and kind of explain why they're here and the purpose that they have, their connection to the community, as well as kind of just, you know, provide updates about what's happening so that people know that we're still here, we still have a voice, we have a Facebook page now, so, you know, things are happening. We even have a new logo. So I'll begin by introducing one of our newest community members and hosts on the show, Olivia. Olivia.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Welcome, Olivia.
I'm really happy to be here. I'm looking through some of the questions that you had for me, but maybe you want to talk a little bit about, I don't know, what we're doing here or what kind of introduction you want me to give.
Yeah, no, I kind of want to just explain who you are. Like, okay. Are you a Portland native? Are you someone that works in the community? Like, who are you, Olivia? Why are you on this show?
So a lot of people know me. I'm the same thing twice. Olivia. I grew up in California, Salvadorian refugee, during the 1990s and late 80s. I came to Portland in late 2000s to go to Reed College, graduated, left.
Go Reed.
No, I'm not a huge fan of the school. I have ethical criticisms of private education, and I kind of have a huge passion for more public services and education now that I'm a little bit older, although I'm very grateful for the advanced education I did get at this private school. I've kind of transitioned to maybe a more like progressive idea of what we should be doing and how paid education can actually harm the community. Now that I'm older, I also spent some time abroad. I lived in Berlin, learned more about what their education program looks like. It's free or almost free, and you know, everybody can access it really easily. It's really great for people of color there as well because it's more equitable. It's easier for people to reach that. And when I came back, I had sort of more of that progressive idea of what I wanted to see here, more of a vision. And mm-hmm. I became a journalist and an activist and a writer.
Did you write for a local newspaper?
I was recently working for the Portland Observer. Mm-hmm. We've recently sort of shifted away from that work.
Yeah.
And now I'm working with PFLAG Black Chapter here from Portland.
Go PFLAG.
Yeah, I'm their new communications specialist, along with Khalil and Layla and Samantha. So we're going to have a good group. Yeah, Samantha Taylor's also there now, and she's doing a great job. We're going to have a really great team going into the new year. I'm trying to think about what else brought me into this community. I'm like an author right now. I had my first book published through Impossible Wings, which is a queer and trans organization. But hold on, I'm trying to think about what else I had. I mean, there's just a lot going on. So
yeah, I mean, I know I think before we kind of formally met, I saw you at so many events that were going on in town. And then I know since you are the communications person for PFLAG, they do have their anniversary. I think that's coming up here in 2 months. So hopefully, I'm excited to see what comes out of all that. And then, yeah, is there something else you wanted to bring up or mention?
I forgot that I really wanted to talk about refugees, but maybe we can come back to that. My family was, I'm an immigrant, and I have a huge interest in bringing that to this show and letting our viewers, I guess our listeners know that that is something I want to bring forward and have us be talking about and hear your questions and issues about is where do queer and trans immigrants fit in within the QTPOC discussion, and how can we bring them into the folds and let them know that there is some community out here for them, even if that necessarily isn't right now culturally jiving, you know what I mean?
For sure, yeah.
Yes.
No, well, I think that'll be a really good topic of discussion, and I think that's, you know, a big part of the show is actually creating that bridge so that people can have access to walk across it, because if, you know, if there's no access, then you can't expect any progress to be made. So, right on. No, thank you.
Yeah, I'm so glad.
Yay.
Well, let's, Phoenix, why don't you talk a little bit?
Oh, yeah, let's introduce Phoenix here, Phoenix Singer.
My partner, Phoenix.
Hi.
Hi, Phoenix. So, what brings you to QTPOC Talk?
Well, okay, I'll first talk about, like, who I am. My name is Phoenix Singer. I've been living in, like, Portland, Oregon since I was around, like, 3 years old. And, ever since, like, I started coming to college, like, I got into college, actually, because I was a youth at the Native American Youth Association on Northeast 52nd in Columbia.
Yeah.
I was, like, part of their extracurricular activities. I'm part of their 2011 graduate photo. They helped me get into college, and since then, like, I started doing a lot of student activism.
Mm-hmm.
I was part of the Oregon Students of Color Coalition.
OSOC.
OSOC.
Oh, yeah, that's what started me.
Yeah.
Come on.
I was there from about 2012 to 13, joined their, like, LGBT board, OSERA, for, like, the next year, and have basically just been doing, like, a lot of, like, kind of academic work. I'm really well known for my article on academia.edu, colonization, True Spirit Identity, and the Logics of White Supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
That's
complex.
Yeah. I'm kind of known for, like, Lauren Chiefelk, like, sharing that in, like, a, like, collection of, like, resources for the community. I also am, like, I just submitted like a paper for the Trans Studies 2016 conference talking about like,
oh my gosh,
trans women of color and like violence specifically, like how 2015, like this huge year, like over 30 trans women of color that were like reported were like killed.
Yeah.
And primarily talking about like, what exactly does this say for like white supremacist, capitalist, imperialist, heteropatriarchy? So like, that's who I am. That's the kind of work that I do. My father was Panamanian American. Mm-hmm. I'm about fourth generation. He was also like indigenous from Panama. I was raised by my white mom and my Jewish stepdad.
That's interesting.
So like a very like multicultural like experience. So I'm just like here to talk about stuff.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I'm so happy to have you here, and the fact that you are just a well of knowledge. I always say wealth instead of well for some reason. Just because I know from a conversation I had with Olivia earlier, like, you could be a dictionary. And I think that's amazing.
I like to joke that
encyclopedia is what I meant.
I was going to say the same thing. Basically, that Phoenix is sort of like the Judith Butler to my Juno Diaz. Like, I will say a joke, I'll let her know about something that I think is funny, and she'll quickly be the first person to analyze it. So she's a great person to go to if you're a creative person to feel like your work is being critically looked at and thought about.
That's good. Constructive criticism. That's good. And well, I think we've got another guest here that's a new host on Cutie Pog Talk that I think some of the listeners might know from a different show on here. Jack Malmstrom, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Jack Malmstrom. I'm also the host of Rose City Native Radio here on KBOO. And I am also a new collective member of Cutie Pog Talk.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm excited to get those creative juices flowing and talking about some stuff. I'm not really sure what else to say.
Yeah.
I am a member of the Portland Two-Spirit Council, which has just recently started up. And I hope to cover a little bit of Two-Spirit issues, being Two-Spirit myself, and cover some Indigenous queer issues as well, and just getting the voice of QT POC out there, because we do exist in the whitest city on earth.
That's a new statistic that's released.
We're here, so we're here, we're queer, and we'd like to talk. So yeah, I'm excited to be a part of this collective, and
Well, no, I'm so happy that you're here, just because I think you're actually the person that engineered our first show.
Yes.
So you've been part of the reason that we've lived for this long, and I think the growth that's going to come out of it, it's going to be phenomenal. So I'm so happy to have you, as well as everyone else that's a part of our collective that's kind of been defined. And I know there are a few other people that have interested that want to be a part of the collective as well that weren't unfortunately unable to be here today. So hopefully during our next session, we'll have some additional voices for people to actually have a better idea of what's happening, how we're transforming. We will be releasing a post on Facebook with our kind of vision and a mission and values. Not that we're a nonprofit, but you know, you gotta see where you're going to actually have any kind of goals available.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of guess on that, I want to get ready to taper us off into a little break session here, so that we can kind of re-up what's going to happen next. So I think on that one, we're going to be queued up here. So tune back in after this smooth break.
I left the city, you got a reputation for yourself now. Everybody knows and I feel left out. Boy, you got me down and got me stressed out. 'Cause ever since I left the city, you started getting dressed and going out more. Glasses of champagne out on the bed.
hanging with some dudes I never seen before. They used to call me on my cell, you were the device at night. You used to call me on my cell, you were the device at night. I know in that hotline bling, that could only mean one thing. For witness. Some people say just let it go.
Getting my hotline bling on. Geez, that's such a good song. Erykah Badu, actually. It's a remix.
I love that remix.
Yeah. No, it's really good. I think you're actually the one that inspired it this week, which was pretty great.
Oh, yes. I'm a huge Erykah Badu fan.
And so now that we're kind of back, I kind of noticed earlier that I didn't actually introduce myself or like kind of bring up like who I am to all the new listeners out there. So I kind of want to just kind of take a step back and do that. So hi, everyone. My name is Darian Jones. I am actually a transplant who moved here like 14 years ago, maybe 15 now. I stopped counting at a point. And I moved from the South, so I'm a complete transplant. And, you know, for me, it took me about 12 years to kind of find the community out here in Portland to even know that there was like a cutie pot community, and kind of it kind of jump started my life, actually, just becoming a member and actually getting active and actually being able to go in a room with other people and feel comfortable and engage in conversations. And Phoenix, earlier you mentioned that you were part of OSOC, which, mm-hmm. you know, OSOC. That was my Kickstarter, actually. Oh. So yeah, I was part of a leadership program that was at PCC, Portland Community College, where we got exposed to kind of social justice work and what that actually looks like and how to actually be like a social justice worker. And I want to say, without people like you, like, mm-hmm. actually leading a conference to actually bring people together to create community, that I know for certain that I wouldn't be here. And mm-hmm. it's amazing what community can do for you. Just being a part of this, I know my life's changed like threefold, fourfold, quadfold, like the same thing, in the past few years. But I am also an active community member. I do a lot of volunteering with PFLAG, Portland Black Chapter. I do some stuff, I think, for another organization that's one of the larger LGBTQ organizations. And I also manage online engagement for a different philanthropy group. So I try to do a lot of things that give back to the community that actually I think is reflective of the vision of creating like equity, because that's something I really believe in. And I'm really thankful that we actually have the airwaves on KBOO to do this, because, you know, essentially there's no other show, and to my knowledge, that's similar to this in like our area. There's a few across the nation, but I don't think there's any in like Oregon that are specific to the queer and trans community of color out here. And we're a huge portion of it. Like, we're like over a third of the population, but, you know, it's like we're like unicorns, which
yeah. It's like just being brown in Oregon is its own like weird feeling. When you see somebody else on the street, you just want to be like, how are you doing?
I do the nod sometimes.
The nod.
Oh, yeah. I think every brown person's got the nod. Us Indians got the nod. Everyone's got the nod. You make eye contact and you're like, sup?
I know, or like when somebody's working someone, you're like, I'm sorry. It's like, and it's interesting too, because media that reaches out, I don't know, I was listening to something recently, and I don't remember exactly where I got this, so forgive me, but I really liked the statement, and it was like, one person in a room is a token, two people is a minority, it takes three people in a big room, or three entities, to really change the tide, to make it seem like they're a meaningful part of some organization. So usually if something doesn't have at least that much of some group, it doesn't really feel like those people have their own, you know, identity, their own ability to collaborate with each other and figure out what they want or what their needs are, because they feel tokenized. And so being able to create more media like this that isn't just where we're the token, it's our thing, it belongs to us, is really, really valuable. And I can't overstate that. Yeah. Exciting for me.
No, I think that's a really great point, because I don't think people really know that, you know, all of KBOO is volunteer, like all the people in AIR are volunteers. So, you know, this is us actually trying to impact the community and actually be a resource for people. And I know I keep repeating like resource, but I just, you know, I feel like if people don't have options or they know that things are available, then, you know, you can't expect them to know, because you don't know what you don't know.
Yep. Yeah. So I was gonna, what was going on that you guys found, I don't know, interesting this week that you thought we could bring to the table to our new listeners and people that we were talking to? Because I mean, there was so much going on.
For me being me, and if anybody is listening knows me, y'all all know I'm obsessed with Beyonce.
Oh my God.
Let's be real. I could really show people how to. Anyway, you're not going to get into it. But,
aren't you going to do the dance? They can't see you do the dance.
I'm not going to do my single ladies dance, but I will say it's really interesting the fact that, you know, last week during the Super Bowl, on Saturday prior to the Super Bowl, she released a video called Formation, which is her latest track. If you haven't heard it, check it out. If you like Beyonce, I'm not telling you what to do, but I'd recommend checking it out.
Oh my God.
And the thing is, it's like, it's a really powerful video. And, you know, myself being someone that was in Hurricane Katrina, that survived the natural disaster, that lost family members, I'm kind of like two-sided about it, because I'm like, you know, this is really great. She's talking about a lot of oppression, a lot of different things that as people of color we experience daily and like hourly, minute, seconds, constantly. But, you know, as someone who wasn't particularly there, it's interesting, just because I've read a few articles. There's a really good one on Black Girl Dangerous about how, you know, Hurricane Katrina was not her disaster. Like, she wasn't there.
Yep.
And she's depicted, when the video begins, on a police car as it's sinking in Louisiana, which I think is really powerful, because the first lyric is what happened to New Orleans, which I think is reflective that the same thing that happened then, it's still happening now, or nothing. And how she uses her Beyonce-ness, or Beyonce, to be that kind of bridge where she, you know, in the past has talked about racial issues, she's talked about different things that are to her, where she, you know, I think 2 or 3 years ago came out as a feminist in her self-entitled album, Beyonce. And now she's actually attacking issues in a sense where she overtly attacks police brutality in the video, where she has a little boy who identifiable boy who is dancing to, what's interesting is the only people who are not people of color are the cops.
Yeah.
And he's dancing to these cops in a black hoodie with jeans on. And it symbolized Trayvon Martin dancing to these cops who are all pointing their guns against this little boy, just dancing. And how reflective that is. And then there's other lyrical content that she has where she talks about her, she likes her baby afro. She likes her baby afro with baby afro and, or baby, she likes her baby with afro and baby hair, which I think is so interesting, because so many people online were like, she needs a comb blues hair. And it's like, she's a baby. Like, what are you going to do? It's curly. It's natural. Mm-hmm. But she really, really talks about that and speaks out loud about it, which was then transferred into her performance at the Super Bowl, where she did a really great rendition and like a tribute to Michael Jackson and Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. And she also had some people who could be identified as freedom fighters, which are now known as the Black Panthers.
Yeah.
That were in there, and they're like, oh, her dancers are holding up a sign in solidarity. Oh, why are they doing this? And I heard the funniest comment where they're like, why is Beyonce talking about race at the Super Bowl? And I'm like, Hello, Middle America. And there's an SNL skit where it's like, Beyonce is black.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I saw
it
like, going around.
No.
Fox News kind of like freaked out and like, yeah. like, wow, she's being so anti-police. And like,
right.
there's like all this rhetoric and like white America of like, oh, she's attacking cops who like protect
totally
her.
Attacks.
And it's like, well, I mean, not they don't really protect her.
Right. And what's funny is that they were like making it all about race when the video is actually talking about the oppression. Mm-hmm. And they're making it seem like, oh, now she's trying to attack us and attack the cops. Don't listen to Beyonce, even though she took the stage from Bruno Mars and Coldplay with their one songs that they do every year.
Oh
and
my
you know, do 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 clocks, right?
I think they all sound alike, so it's fine.
Right. Yeah.
No one's really sure.
No. And
I say that as like somebody who really liked Coldplay when she was 13, so
no, that's 13. So funny.
Highlight that age.
13 Coldplay,
hey,
in my
I had a big serious crush on them when I was like a little kid.
That's adorable.
But why?
Well, you know, I think what's interesting too is that the conversation around Beyonce has been so focused on like, well, can we celebrate this? Can't we just have this one thing? Like, can't we just have this joy? And it's like really a joyous moment. And I'm really like, I just like love the song, even though I don't think I was like, I didn't think it was like, you know, my moment of the century. It wasn't going to change my life, but it gave me a lot of joy. But I'm also kind of a pessimist. Mm-hmm. So like I was like definitely have a lot of friends who are in academia, who are like, you know, critically analyzing things, asking what we want out of like our movements, out of our feminism, out of our looks. Yeah. And one of the most striking things that I was thinking about and that I read was that we've actually lost a lot of like black female performers from the front. Like, we used to, if you go back to, like, you know, 2001, 2002, or, like, the late 90s, we had, like, swarms of different girls to look at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We had India Arie, we had Macy Gray, we had Aaliyah, you had Trina, you had Missy Elliott. And, you know, Beyonce was just formative at that point with Destiny's Child. Mm-hmm. But I feel like now we all need to come behind Beyonce and the few singers we have because there's just, I feel like there's a dearth. There's so much less. So when she does something, there's sort of this collective, like, swarming and excitement. But I do remember when there was a time where we could have, like, I don't know, meaningful, like, differences, and there was a few different options, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's closing in. I don't know if anybody else sees that.
No,
absolutely. Yeah.
I definitely agree that a lot of the mainstream kind of identities that we have as people of color, especially in music, it's really less now than it used to be. And it seems like a lot of people don't get as much hype and they're kind of falling off. Where, you know, at the Grammys last night, Taylor Swift won another award. And I'm like,
so unnecessary. They should call her Taylor Too Slow because she can move out of Kanye's way.
Oh,
that's a burn.
I'm just saying, he's wrong. He's so wrong, but in order to be clowned on by Kanye, you have to be one of the slowest people on earth.
Well, Kanye gets upset real easy, so.
Yeah. Don't get me started on Kanye.
Yeah, I'm not in any way like endorsing him and his behavior, but I just want to let people
most
know.
Most recent tweet was. Mm.
No, he's awful, but so is Taylor Swift. It's like a fight between like, which pile of trash is sadder? I just like don't care.
It's interesting though because like, I think with both movie stars and recording artists, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they do any sort of political statement, why you got to make it about race?
Uh-huh. Right.
Can't we just listen to your music and pretend that you're white? Can't we just listen to your music and not have to think about what color you are? In reality, like this is the reality we face every day. Mm-hmm. It's not going to go away, and it's something that we have to fight with in every industry that we're a part of. And so, like, you know, with Beyonce doing it, it's like, come on, Beyonce, like, we liked you, but now you're making it a race thing. It's like, no, dude, Beyonce was black from the beginning. Like, I don't know. She
magically
turned
never
black.
Seen her color.
Yeah.
I've seen Beyonce.
No. Yeah, she's like Lady Gaga. Like, her color changes all the time.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, it's really interesting when,
my goodness.
You know, why can't you just be our token hint of soul? You know, why can't you just go back to being my hint of color? And why you got to make things serious now? Why can't I just turn my brain off for a little bit and listen to you? And in reality, it's like, you can do that. That's fine. But you should really think about, instead of like being mad at her, you should think about why that upsets you. And like really like kind of look internally and be like, why am I upset about this? Like, why does that make me uncomfortable when a woman like shows her pride in who she is?
Yeah.
it's not a race thing, and it's not like an attack against you personally. So why do you feel that way?
Yeah. You know, I think it's the first time that she's really embraced her identity as a powerful Black female like she is. Because it's interesting that you brought up like all the other songs where she doesn't actually talk about any form of race. Like, it's just love, or it's just having fun, or it's just flaming her hands around, you know. It's cool, it's nice, it's fun.
Yeah.
But in her most recent, like the last album, I'm Obsessed, if people are curious, I've watched all the videos.
Yeah.
And in the last album, you could see this new identity, because like she released that Sasha Fierce album, and now Sasha is Beyonce, and Beyonce is Black. And now I think it's a rude awakening for specifically Middle America, because that's to quote a senator on the news. Like, why is she talking about race to Middle America? And it's like, you know, why wouldn't she? Is really the question, where it's like, do you expect someone who is daily, constantly watching their people be oppressed and destroyed not speak out about it? And she's finally at a platform now, I think, where she's able to do that and not really receive much backlash except for some real intense publicity. But you know what, like directly after that performance, when she pushed the camera out of the way, when they were like going to commercial break, her commercial came on to be like, I got a formation tour going around the world. And you know what, I was trying to buy tickets to that, and let me tell you, there are some barriers to seeing Beyonce, and it's called dinero.
Yeah, I was about to talk about that, man. Yeah, there's so much joy there, but Bill Gates, do we really want a Black Bill Gates? Bill Gates is got some blood on his hands.
Well, you know, you know, no one's hands are clean in this life we all live.
Yeah, that's true. Totally. So,
that is something that is interesting, because I saw, it was a while back, there was an article that was like, you know, dear Beyonce, as a Katrina survivor, like, you know, my tragedy is not your prop, your background, or whatever. Uh-huh. So I'm curious what you guys thought about maybe some of that backlash as well.
I would say that, like, there's always all sorts of backlash that happens whenever Beyonce does anything. And I think, like, in some limited cases, like, there's things to talk about. Like, there was, like, an article that was saying that Beyonce, like, was arguing that formation meant that, like, this is the way we destroy white supremacists that are patriarchy. And I think that's, like, a lot of people project both their fears of Beyonce and their hopes for Beyonce in, like, a lot of these things.
Yeah.
So I think that for, like, a lot of those, like, critiques and articles, like, a lot of them, I'm not necessarily sure where they're getting, like, their fears of what Beyonce is doing, or necessarily even their hopes. Though it just seems like, I don't know. I also wanted to, like, briefly say that this isn't really the first time that, like, specifically a Black woman has talked about race, like, in the public eye, as, like, a musician, as an artist. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a long history of that. There's, like, a long history of even more radical people saying even more radical things. Mm-hmm. So, like, it just seems really, really bizarre that, like, we've kind of just forgotten, like, this entire history, and just, like, everyone has all of, not only all of these hopes for Beyonce, but also all these fears, these intense anxieties that, like, she's somehow maybe going to be, like, a communist revolutionary, is going to destroy the entire, like, white supremacist, heteropatriarchal, like, world. And I don't know. I don't know if it's, like, if she's necessarily, like, at that level, but...
And I think that's... You brought up a really good point, which I think brings us back to kind of Olivia's main statement, where we don't have any other idols. We don't have any other icons out there. And now you have the most successful female Black artist speaking out about racial issues. Mm-hmm. And now you see how it just... It spurred the condition. Like, yeah, I'm so perplexed. Like, oh my gosh. I think that Saturday Night Live rendition of like the day Beyonce turned Black is the best depiction of kind of how our country has been swarmed and engulfed in this madness, where we just don't talk about race, and we make it seem like it's like something we can't talk about at the table. And you know, earlier today I went out to an early screening of the film Race the Movie, which is about Jesse Owens, who is a national Olympian. Yeah, Jesse's great. It's a pretty... I like the film, so hashtag like Jesse on Twitter. You know, you can also find my contest I'm doing, where I'm giving away 2 tickets to see Like Jesse. Yeah, on Twitter. So look at that on Twitter, at Darian_Jones. But it's interesting is that you know, Jesse went to the Olympic Games. This isn't a spoiler alert, by the way, because it's history, so yeah. Don't be confused. This is not a spoiler. I'll give you a spoiler
alert,
warning, but you should just go look in the history books. And so Jesse goes, and it's during the 1936 Berlin Olympics, which are in Berlin, Germany, during Hitler's regime. And Jesse defies so many things by winning, including the Führer. And he ends up coming back home, and we're like, ready to be like, you're so awesome, Jesse. You did America great. Let's have a banquet for you and your wife. But you know what? When you come home and you come to this country after you've won these 4 gold medals for us, we're going to make you go in the side entrance with your wife. You can come in the service entrance and come up a back elevator where people can't see you because you're still a colored man in this country. And I think that's just such an interesting depiction and reality that we live in, where we, you know, we were so progressive. Like, we're going to go across the nation or across the world and like win all these medals with our black athlete who's actually a world champion, but we won't actually allow him to come through the front doors to a dinner, a banquet in his honor. So I think that shows you kind of where America was at in 1936 and how now we
not
are
that long
back,
ago.
Right, yeah. Right, not too long ago. We're almost 100 years ago, and now we're in 2016. Wow, I was like 2017. I don't even know what year we're in because it seems like it's not moving. And you know, Beyonce says Negro, which was by large the name for black people in this country for decades, centuries, and now we're all up in a flux about it. And so I think it's interesting how we still aren't able to engage in these conversations on like an intellectual level with the majority of our population. And then when we do engage in those conversations, there's backlash for the person who starts it, who particularly when it's a black person, you're like, why are you doing that? Why are you making it about race? I don't see your color. You're just clear, translucent, obviously. So, you know, I think on that, I think we should probably kind of taper off into a break here, kind of get ready to see what we've got in the mix for y'all tonight. I know we always try to uplift people from the community and play different tracks that maybe you're not used to, maybe you haven't heard. So you know what would be really cool? If you want to email us a mixtape, because somebody offered me a mixtape the other day and I was like, you know, this is really great. I love instrumental more than, but anyways, cutiepoctalk@gmail.com is our official email. So if you have a song or you have an idea you want to email us, cutiepoctalk@gmail.com. And we're going to break.
Welcome back, guys. Sorry, this is QT Park Talk with Eartha Kitt's This is my man. Sorry, I didn't want to say this is my man. This is my man.
Where is my man?
Where is my man? There you go. See, I don't know all my Eartha Kitt.
So as we're kind of welcoming everybody back to the show, I think we were going to taper into a topic that so many of us are familiar with in the community, which kind of goes to the racial dynamics that happen with still with within the LGBTQ community here, especially in Portland. And, you know, I get to be a special snowflake here because I have this doppelganger who goes around Portland and people think I'm him, but I'm definitely not this person. And people,
I wonder who this is.
Yeah, I'm not going to say their name on the radio, but I just want to let you know if you see me out in town, I'm probably not this guy. But if you know him and you still think I'm him and you accuse me of it, you still might be wrong. And even within the community, that happens where, you know, people will see one of us and they'll get so excited, like, oh my gosh, there's a proper talking black man in the queer community. Who are you? How do you talk like this? And my first question that I always get is, where are you from? Because, you know, I can never be from Portland. I can never be from this area. I always have to be some sort of like exoticized. That's right.
Yeah, roughly exoticized. And it's always like, where are you from? Oh, I'm Portland. No, originally. No, mm-hmm, where are your parents from? You know, things like that.
Yeah, and it seems to be really easy, especially in like a culture that's particularly, it's dominated by white gay men out here in Portland, where I mean, to find a queer space for communities of color is far from none, or close to none, not far from it, it's really close. The only place I've really been seeing a large group of us is well, mainly with PFLAG, and then there are events that are happening at local lounges on MLK, but, you know, for the majority, there's not too many things centered around us, and it's more so, it seems like people are trying to tokenize and take ownership of a lot of our issues. And I know that's been the priority for a few organizations this year who, you know, are seeking to create like an equitable Oregon for all LGBTQ Oregonians, as well as people who maybe have the black identity but aren't necessarily part of the queer community, who are trying to take on those issues. But the people who are actually impacted in our community don't seem to actually have much power. And I'm just curious to know what anyone else, any of these other co-hosts here think.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's what you said about like being able to identify as something other than straight and then also not being white becomes so complicated. I would say I mostly thought of myself as a boring straight person for most of my life into my mid-20s because I didn't think there was a way to... I'm like, well, I'm not white. And then what you learn, I guess, from some communities that are hostile at some times, like, and it's not the whole community, it's just maybe your family or some people that you know and you fall in with that group, they're hostile to the idea of like homosexuality or transsexuality being some kind of like white supremacist colonist idea that someone else brought upon you, when actually I think homophobia is more of a, you know, colonizer
absolutely.
Concept.
Absolutely.
I saw this great post on Facebook the other day that was talking about how there were same-sex union, same-sex relationships, homosexuality in Africa before colonialism happened, before the white man showed up. But what they brought with them wasn't the homosexuality, it was the homophobia and being afraid of it, and how that's still part, it's ingrained in our community now. Where, you know, it's like, and you said it's a specific communities that kind of do this ostracization, but I think it's a big part of the black community actually that does it, because I know I grew up in a town that was like 99% black, and there
wow.
was, that's, it's huge.
Compared to Portland.
Woo, it's totally different. But, you know, back there, there was only really one person that I knew of at the time, and I was really young, who was actually like out and gay, and that person was hated by the town. Like, you knew not to be associated with that person. You knew that something was wrong with them, but you had, like, as a child, I remember having these feelings and not knowing, being like, I mean, I didn't have an issue, but I knew that everyone else did, and how it became this like thing where it's like just person was not liked by the community. And so if you're someone that already has the oppression of race on you, and then you don't have anywhere to go in your own community, how like detrimental that can be.
Damien, have you seen this documentary?
Who's Damien? I'm going to call you out right now.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of another Indian. I'm hanging out with so many Indians. I'm so sorry. Darian, have you seen this documentary that's on Netflix called The New Black?
And I've heard of it. No, I haven't.
I highly recommend it. And anyone listening, it's called The New Black. I think it's still, I'm pretty sure it's still on Netflix. And it's about, like, you know, it shows like a LGBT, like, I think it's a lesbian couple in the black community and how, like, the reactions are. And it's all during the big push for marriage equality. I'm trying to figure, in 2013, so, like, right around the time a lot of states were, like, you know, legalizing it. So it's a really interesting view into like black culture and how that kind of the reaction with that in those communities. They interview like pastors and things like that as well. And I definitely recommend it because a lot of the things that you've been talking about are kind of covered in that. And it's really interesting to see that from like a cultural perspective. Like I know in indigenous communities, the homophobia is there as well, even though, you know, we've had two-spirit people, you know, since time began. A lot of tribes considered them sacred, and they were very important, and it was a great thing if you had, like, a two-spirit person born in your family. But now, because of colonization, Christianity and things like that, sometimes, you know, people who are two-spirit are not accepted by their family anymore, and those traditional ways are lost. And, you know, they're not documented because the colonizers didn't like what they saw. So it's interesting to see, like, different cultures reacting, but at the same time, we're all affected by the big C word being colonization. So
the erasure of cultures.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm ready for Phoenix to talk about the coloniality of genders.
Okay.
All the time.
Phoenix, take it away.
Okay. So I'm just going to break down some theory. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's this Latin American theorist named Maria Lagunes. And she primarily talks about what she terms the coloniality of gender. It's like really, really applicable to a lot of these conversations and a lot of her own experiences. Specifically, she's like talking about how like the entire worldview that was brought like with colonization, with slavery, with imperialism, like included like capitalism, obviously. But also like in a lot of cases, like patriarchal ideas of like what gender is. So, like, Maria Lagunes, like talks and takes from, like, a lot of indigenous feminisms and, like, this one, I'm forgetting her name. She wrote the book The Invention of Women or Woman, something like that. She's a Yoruban, like, academic, and she primarily talks about how, like, there's all of these anthropologists who, like, would talk about, like, her culture and would project gender upon, like, all of time on her culture. And she's like, well, actually, here's the thing, we didn't have gender before colonialism. Though, like, just thinking about a lot of these conversations and about how, like, there's all this homophobia in our own communities, it's really, like, a relic of a very specific, like, Western, like, idea. Maria Lagunes, like, breaks it down to, like, two separate things, like, the light side of gender, which, like, white people have, and the dark side of gender, which is, like, everyone else. Her, like, her ideas here are, like, the colonial encounter with like indigenous peoples, like white people pretty much just thought as of like black people, indigenous peoples, and not being normatively sexed. That white people got to be sexually dimorphic and everyone else was kind of like outside of that. They weren't really gendered. They weren't really sexed like in the ways that like white people were. So just thinking about that and why like a lot of people have experiences with being like, well, I've never really been treated like a woman or never really been treated like a man, like a white man is, like there's a reason for that.
Yeah, it's like women of color do not get treated like full women. And that's been a huge topic during the election. I had an article come out earlier this week at the Establishment about the way white women and white feminists will treat women of color when they think nobody is looking. And it's outrageous. And a lot of it has to do with what you were talking about with like the coloniality of gender and the idea that like the true form, the platonic form of the woman is like the Aryan woman, the white woman. And that's true for men as well, I think, right? I don't know, Phoenix?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Maria Lagunes definitely, like, includes, like, this idea that a lot of indigenous men and black men were not really considered to be, like, men, because like what was considered to be man was also human, and white supremacy defined like humanity and like gender like as only being applicable to whiteness. So like I think that's like a conversation and like a bunch of theory that comes in here and like explains like why we're treated the way that we are, like when we go and interact with like white people and when we interact with our own communities, and why that homophobia exists. Like a lot of more traditional ideas of like sexuality and gender were just pretty much overthrown or just subsumed and repressed.
I think it's interesting that even in the LGBT community, we're still tokenized. Like mm-hmm. the oppressed oppressing the oppressed, or whatever, the oppressed becomes the oppressor.
Right.
We're still tokenized, we're still exoticized, like like nobody's business. which it's really surprising and sad, but I see a lot of, you know, what Phoenix talked about reflecting in the LGBT community as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're not a black man, you're a fetish, you're, right. you know, something else completely. And it's really weird that exists in this type of community, but I'm curious, you know, of other thoughts or you know, experiences with that.
Well, I think it's easy for people to kind of just exoticize and turn people into something that they like, that's just like a treat or like something mm-hmm. that you think is really cool. Cause I know so many people who are like, I'm super progressive, and you know, like I don't like white men who are like, I don't date white men cause they're all terrible. But at the same time, I'm going to be super oppressive to all of my friends of color. And when I get upset with them, I'm going to cut them out of my lives. Like they don't matter as people. Or I'm going to bring up the fact that I have like 5 friends of color and talk about how I totally know all their issues, all their racial problems, when I have no authority to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think out here in Portland, it's really easy for that to happen. And I think Phoenix, earlier you mentioned something about how colonialism and how people that were not white were viewed as this other mm-hmm. sex, and how it's interesting when you think about these indigenous cultures that had different types of like sexual relations where mm-hmm. when you think about why homophobia grew, I'm curious to know if it's because it was that much farther away from this colonial ideology of what like men and women should look like and what they should do. And the fact that if you're not heterosexual, you're part of this other thing, and this other thing is not what we want the world to be. And so therefore it's less than. And so I think for a lot of cultures and communities, it's easier to mm-hmm. plug everyone into that less than thing when you speak one narrative. And, you know, people are interested in learning about like the one narrative, I think Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie does a really great TED talk about the single story, which shows how if you only tell one story, that's all the stories people are going to hear. And how she grew up in a culture where, you know, all these toys, like she grew up in a privileged time and then went to school here in America, and how people are like, oh my gosh, you're from Africa.
Africa.
You're here in college?
The motherland.
And in college.
You speak
the way they
English?
Talk about her.
I think it's a really interesting kind of way that our society has developed from that, and how we're still afraid to kind of revisit the early creations and like what made us today. Mm-hmm. Because if, you know, if you don't know the history, then you can't be like, oh no, maybe that's just how it is. And that's honestly how a lot of people live, where they're just like, this is just how it is. And mm-hmm. that's a reality, that is how it is. But if you don't have the kind of emotions, the feelings, or the conviction to change anything or challenge people, that's where the problem comes in. I think when people start to challenge people that are in power, that's when you have all these questions. That's when you have like, why is Beyonce talking about race? Because it's like she's mm-hmm. challenging you to actually talk about it, and actually for more people to be aware. And I think that's what a lot of the issue is that if you kind of mask up what the truth is with all these other little smokes and screens, and you mm-hmm. won't have people who are invested, and you'll have people who will believe the same thing over and over again. But I mean, not to bring us back to this Beyonce thing, I think it's so interesting, because she is the white Barbie, the black white Barbie, where everybody can play with her. Like I can play her. Like she's got like hardly any swear words in her lyrics. Like everybody I know bumps some Beyonce. I'm like, you heard this new Beyonce cut? Yeah. Except for Formation, because I don't know what it's about. And I think that's the most interesting thing, is that you have someone that was this poster person of what, you know, what we want to see from the black people. We want to see them be successful and be really fair skinned, mm-hmm. she's really light skinned. And the fact that now, as this person that they've created, because I want to let you know, those $1,700 tickets to be in the stadium, I mean, those are the front row seats, but to be in the stadium is like $200. And to be near, like, away from that is $700. So the people who are buying these tickets are not going to be the same people who actually understand this message, because a huge portion of the Black community, the Black people of color, honestly, are disenfranchised. We don't have the same income or source or historical ties to money. And so I'm by default, you know, we're not going to be the ones that are buying these $1,700 tickets to see Beyonce. It's going to be it's honestly going to be white America. And I think that's interesting to kind of see what happens as it plays out, because tickets are almost sold out and they just went on sale a week ago. And I'm just curious to see what happens with this authority that, you know, someone like Beyonce does have on our nation.
Well, I think a thing that ties a lot of these conversations, Beyonce and, as well as like a lot of this homophobia stuff, is like, I'll talk about it later.
Yeah, no. I think you have a.
Okay. So Amy Chazere, who's like a Martinique, like academic, like he's why we have a lot of like indigenous decolonization theory in America, basically. And he has this like thing that everyone cites, which is colonization equals thingification. And if we just think about how like white Americans treat Beyonce, how like people of color and queer people of color are treated, it's because like we have been like relegated to like things, objects.
Yeah, and it's I think it's easy to other people of color, you know, because we're not the main narrative that's reflected in our country. You know, I mentioned that earlier with the story about Jesse and how he still can't come to the front door even though he won all these medals. And so what do you feel, Olivia?
I just feel very attached to what you guys are saying, and also realizing that, like, I don't know, I remember when Angela Davis came to Reed College and the sense of sorrow I had at looking at myself being the only brown woman in the row that I was in, and you don't know what you've lost once you've climbed these ranks and you turn around and you see an entire room full of white people with elderly black citizens of this community standing in line outside and being turned away so that, you know, children with $50,000 a year to spend on a private education ask her questions that she should not be answering at her age and in her life. Like, okay, Angela Davis, I would like to ask you, why do you always talk about race? What is the point of her being asked that when there are people, hundreds of people outside wishing that they could see her before, you know, they pass away or before that generational link is gone? So that's something to think about when we think about $700 Beyonce tickets and this thingification we have as ourselves. And even as, you know, we're all talented here, we're going to, you know, create change in our lives and rise. Yeah, create change in our lives and rise. Who will be able to share that space in that room with us, and how can we continue to open doors for them as we move on?
I think that's a wonderful kind of question to sort of end the show on, and maybe spark some ideas from our listeners out there. Yeah, think about that. Great question from Olivia. And
Marian, where can they find more information on Cutie Pock Talk?
Oh, Cutie Pock Talk. I think we're at like kboo.fm/CutiePockTalk.
We're on Facebook.
We also have a Facebook account too. That's facebook.com/CutiePockTalk. We also have an official email address, which is cutiepocktalk@gmail.com. And it's not cute, like CUITUTE. Like, wow, that was a cutie. It's actually the letter Q and then a T.
And then POC.
Talk. And then also we will be launching a Twitter account this week. So stay tuned for all the social media needs to stay connected to Cutie Pock Talk. And I want to again introduce myself as Darian Jones.
Olivia.
Phoenix Singer.
And Jack Malmstrom.
And thank you again for listening to Cutie Pock Talk here on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Bye.
Gravity takes to the sky. Daydreams not.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard on the web at www.kbu.fm. The time is 7 o'clock. Stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio coming up next.
On February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., Grassroot News will honor the memory, legacy, and life of Malcolm X. Join us for the music, the memory, and the deconstruction of Malcolm's political career, his split from the Nation of Islam, and the course of actions that led to his assassination 51 years ago on February 21st, 1965. As Ozzie Davis eulogized,
"Prince, our own black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so."
Again, on February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., join us